Rivera on WNYC, Yeats, Hemingway, Steinbeck, Toni Morrison, Marquez, Dylan. What do they have in common? Well, as of today, they are all Nobel laureates in literature. Bob Dylan, if you haven't heard it yet, was announced this morning as the 2016 winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature, quote, for having created new expressions within the great American song tradition, unquote. In a career spanning over five decades, Dylan has consistently captured the feelings and mood of generations of Americans. He's explored themes of teenage romance, racial and social injustice, religion, so much more. One of the best-selling artists of all time, he has sold over 100 million records and is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Here's one example you may not know. Only a Pawn in Their Game is a song written by Dylan about the assassination of civil rights activist Medgar Evers. It was released on Dylan's The Times They Are a Changin' album in 1964, and he performed it at the March on Washington, the famous one, on August 28, 1963, the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream speech march. Here is just the beginning of the album version.
A bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. A finger fired the trigger to his name. A handle hit out in the dark. A hand sent the spark. Two eyes took the aim behind a man's brain. But he can't be blamed. He's only a pawn in their game. The South politician preaches to the poor white man. You got more than the blacks, don't complain. You're better than them, you've been born with white skin, they explain. And the Negro's name is used, it is plain, for the politician's gain as he rises to fame. And the poor white remains on the caboose of the train, so it ain't him to blame. He's only a pawn in that game.
And how contemporary is that in 2016? 52 years later. Bob Dylan, winner today of the Nobel Prize for Literature. Now, Dylan is not the only poet in the news. Since Claudia Rankine was last on the show to talk about her 2014 book Citizen, an American Lyric, it won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Poetry, having been a finalist in the criticism category as well, the Penn Open Book Award. It was named a New York Times Book Review Notable Book. And now she's been named one of this year's MacArthur Fellows, also known as the MacArthur Genius Award, because it goes to creative people in the arts and sciences. Citizen continued her work of engaging with tough social issues, from shootings of unarmed black men, the cover shot is of a sweatshirt hood, to Serena Williams, to the offhand racism of private conversations with coworkers or real estate agents. She will be a guest on a panel that I'm moderating next Friday night, October 21st, as part of the Dodge Poetry Festival in Newark at NJPAC, called The Work to be Done, Poetry and Social Justice, A Conversation, along with fellow poets Martin Espada, Juan Felipe Herrera, and Katha Pollitt. That'll be at NJPAC next Friday, October 21st. And now we welcome back to WNYC Claudia Rankine. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me.
So tell the truth. Is it better to be a genius or to get the cash prize that accompanies the fellowship of $625,000 over 5 years?
Well, you know, certain things you don't pull apart, right? Just move forward.
The MacArthur Foundation said you are, quote, crafting critical texts that are proving to be essential for understanding American life while also enriching the craft of poetry with a new sense of agency and urgency. They think they're poets themselves. Agency and urgency.
Alliteration.
Can you talk about that new sense of agency? What do you want your poems to do in the world?
I'm thinking about Bob Dylan this morning and Only a Pawn in Their Game, that song you just played, a song that was played performed to encourage voter registration. You know, it was played at rallies back in 1960. So, that sense that the work, the words, are replicating and mirroring the society that you're living in and showing it to you in ways that make sense. I think Dylan did that throughout his life and a life that changed in terms of his focus. You know, he moved through politics into religion and through love. You know, he's incredible. So I'm a little bit excited about him.
I can hear it. So you're not surprised or you don't object at all that a singer-songwriter was accepted as a poet by the Nobel Committee?
He is a poet. He's a craftsman. He works with language. I think when people have had the kind of impact that he's had, we all have his words in our mouth. We've sung his lyrics. He's been writing. That song was written the year that I was born. So he's been around all my 53 years. And each of those years has contributed some kind of song that, you know, in college, I remember walking around with friends singing Bob Dylan songs.
Mm. Both Citizen and your previous book, Don't Let Me Be Lonely, we notice have the subtitle, An American Lyric. And the word lyric can be used in various ways. But I wonder if you fantasize being a songwriter to some degree, because that's the way people usually think of lyrics.
No, I don't. I mean, what songwriters can do, I can't do. That sense of bringing it down to a repeatable moment. I'm always surprised at how short songs are, given how much landscape they cover often.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was just listening to Solange's new album, which she said was inspired somewhat by Citizen. And I hear turns of phrases in her songs, and I think, oh, why didn't I say that? That's so much more direct in a certain way and musical and stays with you. But so I think it's slightly different discipline in a way.
I'm sure people read you and have the same wistful thought about their own work. About Citizen, it directly engaged with the issue of the shootings of unarmed black men by the police, stories that have kept coming, and you've continued to address this issue in your work. That was 2014, and obviously these are still coming.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote an essay in the New York Times Magazine more recently titled The Condition of Black Life is One of Mourning. Do you think there are limits to what poetry can express? Do you need to get into prose kinds of essays in order to really get to what people need to hear? Or does all work by a poet become poetry in some sense?
Well, that's where I'm working from, that everything I write belongs in the realm of my discipline. But I do think that the difference maybe is in the role of the sentence versus the role of the line. Poetry, if you think of it in its most traditional sense, has the ability to kind of elide and move metaphorically. And when you're working narratively, it handles time in a very different way and can hold facts in a very different way. So, you know, it depends on what tools you're bringing to the telling. But I don't know. I Citizen is a book that includes both essay and more traditional lyric and prose poems. And I don't make those distinctions for myself.
Yes. And I see that you're also working on adapting Citizen for the stage. Given its many voices and approaches, where do you start?
Well, the adaptation is with Arts Emerson in Boston, and I've been working with an amazing dramaturg, P. Carl And he and I realized very quickly that the point wasn't really to try and bring the book to the stage, but to bring the concerns of the book to the stage. So we were able to come up with the plan of a dinner party where much gets said in an intimate arena. So that's where we started.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Do you have prospects for producing it in a theater somewhere?
Well, there, Arts Emerson does production, so we are planning on having it mount in the fall of 2017.
I've read where you plan to use this MacArthur money to set up a racial imaginary institute. Is that a think tank or an arts collective or some combination?
It's some combination. And what I would love to do and am in the process of doing is bringing together artists, writers, and thinkers to make work in order to show how white dominance has redirected the gaze in American history, and so that we can begin to see the trappings. You know, sometimes, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I've been listening closely to the police who have been killing the unarmed, mostly black men and women. And I heard this one interview where a white policeman was asked, "Why did you shoot when no one was pointing a gun at you?" And he said, "I don't know. I don't know." And that moment for me was stunning, that the idea that the white imagination is being propelled and moved forward without really a sense of what created the fears that are making it feel like it needs to protect itself from something that's not happening, you know?
Is that white? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, just the white imagination. Because when that policeman said, I don't know why I shot him, it occurred to me that something else was happening for him. You know, something was in his head. It had been put there.
The white imagination, you've said a couple of times. Is that why you want to call this thing that you want to establish a racial imaginary institute? That's an interesting word, imaginary, for something dealing with tough social issues.
Exactly, because I think a lot of what motivates us is in the imagination and not grounded in reality. And those things are culturally maintained, produced, and relied upon. You know, ideas like white beauty is superior to all other beauty, for example, that women with blonde hair are better looking than all other women. So a lot of women now dye their hair blonde, you know, because the belief is there. It's there. It's been put there, and it's been maintained by the media. So I thought it might be interesting to have an institute and bring together artists and thinkers who are investigating these things that we take for granted, and actually are negotiating every day, but unconsciously.
Where do you think we are as a society in dealing with white supremacy since Citizen came out in 2014? Are you encouraged by what seems to be a moment of recognition and widespread conversation, or have there just been too many dark incidents to feel like it is a moment of progress?
No, I think it's a moment of progress. I think the idea that we're having these conversations is incredible. You know, it's tragic what's happening in terms of the dark incidents, to use your term. But those things were always happening, and they were happening without the recognition and without the conversation. And so it's still tragic that we haven't gotten to a point where we can stop the killings and the racism and uproot the institutional structures that maintain the imbalance in terms of the justice system and other and schools, etc. But we're having the conversation, and we're having it nationally, we're having it publicly and privately for the first time in a sustained way. And I that, for me, is very hopeful.
Claudia Rankin is a professor of poetry at Yale, a 2016 MacArthur Fellow, and the author of Citizen, an American Lyric. She will be on a panel that I'll be moderating next Friday, the 21st, at 6:30 at NJPAC, as part of what's billed as the largest poetry event in North America, the 30th anniversary Geraldine R. Dodge Poetry Festival. We'll put a link to the festival's website on our show page at WNYC.org, or check all the events out at DodgePoetry.org, DodgePoetry, one word, .org. I'll see you then.
I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
And coming up next, Doug Schoen on Putin and the elections. But first, we'll conclude this segment with a moment from a bus tour of the South Bronx that Claudia Rankin wrote about for the Foundry Theater.
Throughout all the years, in these streets, without landscaping, comes the understanding. There is no view other than our own. There is no true world to come.